Good morning. It is 9:30 a.m. We are here today, March 5th, 2019, in the OPA hearing room, suite 907 of the DNA building in Hagatna, Guam, for the motions hearing of OPAPA 19-001 JJ Global versus the Guam Visitors Bureau. Presiding over the hearing today is Hearing Officer Anthony R. Camacho. For the record, also present from the Office of Public Accountability are Jarek Hernandez and Ellen Dallasay. Will appellant JJ Global please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning, Vanessa Williams on behalf of JJ Global. And from JJ Global, we have Representative Kiko Bustamante.
Thank you. Will purchasing agency GBB please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Yes, good morning. My name is Thomas Fisher. I'm an attorney representing the Guam Visitors Bureau. Seated to my left is Ms. Pilar Laguana, who is the president of the Guam Visitors Bureau.
Thank you. Will interested party Landscape Management Systems, Inc. please identify themselves and any institutional representatives present for the record?
Good morning. This is Mitch Thompson. I am counsel for interested party LMS. Also present with us this morning is the president of LMS, Robert Salas.
Thank you. We may proceed.
All right. So today, we're going to have the motion hearing. There are three motions that were filed prior to the expiration of the deadline for filing motion. Two are by the appellant. There's a motion for injunctive relief and stay of procurement. The second motion is the motion for order to supplement procurement record, motion for discovery. The third is filed by the purchasing agency, which is a motion to dismiss appeal, which was joined by interested party Landscape Management Systems. So our order of march for this morning is going to start with the appellant, and we are going to begin with the motion for injunctive relief and stay of procurement. Before we get into all that, are there any preliminary matters that I should be made aware of before we begin?
None from purchasing agency.
None? Okay.
On behalf of JJ Global, may we address the two motions together? A motion to supplement the procurement record with the motion for injunctive relief because the issues are related?
Absolutely not. We have the obligation to preserve the record in this matter, and we have to divide the two so we know which argument goes to which particular motion. So we're going to address each motion separately. You're going to have the opportunity to argue your motions. We'll follow with any opposition to the motion, and then whoever has the motion or filed the motion will have the opportunity to rebut, just like we do in the Superior Court. There is one preliminary issue I have. That is yours, Ms. Williams. You filed a request for subpoenas.
Yes, sir.
To fulfill that request, you have to provide the subpoenas.
Right.
Okay, and I know that the formal hearing is just next week, Wednesday the 13th, so please provide those as soon as possible, so we might get them out to you.
That's right.
Yes, we'll do that.
Without any further ado, the first motion will be the motion for injunctive relief and stay of procurement. Ms. Williams, this is your motion. You have the floor to argue it.
Yes. On the motion for injunctive relief and stay, we're not asking the public auditor or this office to find that the automatic stay is in place. We're asking for equitable relief under the equitable authority of the public auditor to enforce the procurement laws of Guam. The issue on appeal, the merits, is whether the determination of non-responsibility was arbitrary, capricious, or in violation of law. Now, JJ Global we are likely to succeed on this issue because the determination of non-responsibility is completely unsupported by the procurement record. The agency has supplied their procurement record with their report, and there's no information on which they base their determination of non-responsibility. The determination of non-responsibility claims that they had insufficient contract performance. Their agency report or response in this appeal says that they've received reliable information from certain agencies that say that JJ Global is non-responsible, but the procurement record is completely devoid of this. Now, there are two things kind of highlighted where we know that the procurement record is insufficient, which would make the determination of non-responsibility arbitrary, capricious, and in violation of law. The first being that there is no log of communications with these agencies. The agencies, which GVB purportedly relied on making their determination. What we have in the procurement record are a few faxes and emails going out to these agencies, but there's no response. There is no log of communications that say, okay, this is when we spoke with so-and-so from the airport authority. This is when we spoke with so-and-so from Guam Power Authority, et cetera. So that log of communications would have indicated, okay, what information did they rely on? This wasn't discretionary on GVB's part either. This is a violation of law because the Guam procurement law explicitly provides that GVB, or the purchasing agency, must provide a record of all communications between GVB and any government employee and any member of public regarding the procurement. Now, the reason is to ensure the policies of procurement law to ensure transparency, fairness, and integrity. So how are we to know what this determination is based on if it's not in the procurement record? Because they don't have the log, that's a violation of law. Now, GVB's response to the protest and even into this motion is, well, this is ipsy dixit. This is, you have no proof of that. You know, you're claiming that there's no communications. But it's not JJ Global's responsibility to keep a log of all communications that GVB has. It's GVB's responsibility by law. We also note that there is evidence to support that there's documents missing. Not only has GVB admitted it, so it's undisputed that they don't have this requirement, but if we look at the bid analysis and administrative review on page 136 of the procurement record, where they reference these contact lists, there's a little asterisk in that column, and it says, see attached notes. There's no notes attached to that. They're nowhere in the procurement record. I've scoured their 300 pages, and so we have them admitting they don't have a log. We don't have a log. We didn't make it. We're not going to make one now. This cavalier disregard for a requirement by law. And we have their administrative review and analysis saying, oh, yeah, we'll see our notes, but we don't have these notes, and we're not going to provide them. So without this information, it is an arbitrary, capricious decision. It's in violation of law and requiring that they have a log of all these communications, and that's why we're likely to succeed on the merits. Alternatively, there's very serious questions raised here. I mean, this is not just about JJ Global. This is about an agency who has a practice of not preserving these communications and violating procurement law. I think it's worth noting and that we can take judicial notice here that they just had a protest with TLK, and they had the same issue where they didn't have a log of communications. They didn't have the procurement record is insufficient, and there was no way to determine whether they acted arbitrary, capricious, or in violation of law. So there are serious questions raised. This is not the first time that GVB has been in this position. And on that basis, this office should exercise their equitable authority to issue a stay on the contract performance. Now, I want to note that they said, well, there's going to be harm to LMS. There's going to be harm to GVB. And GVB cited some cases, federal claims court cases, saying that the harm to the agency and the public would outweigh any potential harm to JJ Global by way of lost profits for being the lowest bidder. Now, those cases were relying on the fact that they would have been subject to a breach of contract claim by the prevailing bidder. In this case, that would be LMS. But if you look at the procurement record and the contract, there is a termination for convenience clause. There's and any harm or alleged harm to the public that there may be, Guam procurement law also provides a way to address that. They can issue an emergency procurement. They can, on a short-term basis, just until the formal hearing, which is just, you know, in a few weeks or a couple weeks, and any urgent landscaping safety issues that need to be addressed can be addressed there. With that said, I think that touches on the motion for injunctive relief. We're very likely to succeed on the merits. We have an admission from GVB itself that it doesn't have the support or the communications log to support its determination, which is a violation of law, and it's arbitrary and capricious. We have, by law, JJ Global is going to be irreparably harmed. They were the lowest bidder, and they would have prevailed if they without this sham determination of non-responsibility. And aside from those issues, there are very important public questions by which the public auditor could address and put a stop to in this cavalier disregard for the procurement record.
Thank you, Ms. Williams. Mr. Fisher, on behalf of the purchasing agency.
Thank you, sir. I just real briefly touch upon Ms. Williams' last point. The agency actually invited JJ Global to essentially push back on our determination of non-responsibility, and they declined to do so. We specifically invited them to go talk to the agencies we told them had, given us disparaging remarks about their performance. And this was well over a month, well, this was probably 2 months ago, and absolutely nothing came back. So they decided, for whatever reason, that they didn't want to actually go out and visit with, say, GWA or GIAA and actually put together the information that would show that they were responsible. And we also told them that if they could come forward with something like that, we would entertain a redetermination of our finding of non-responsibility. Again, nothing came back on that. They've asked for injunctive relief. I don't see any authority for the OPA to grant injunctive relief. I'm not sure I've ever actually seen the OPA do that, especially when it comes to the determination of whether or not there was the preliminary stay. Now, I would note that in the procurement record, the agency report, we have the determination by Nate DeKnight, the ex-president of GVB, that they were, in fact, non-responsible. It's now on the appellant's shoulders to show that they are responsible. According to the case law, the agency's made a determination. It's entitled to, a presumption of regularity. That shifts the burden to them. And if they don't show that with some amount of evidence that they are, in fact, responsible, then the question that comes to the hearing officer is whether or not the agency's determination was arbitrary and capricious. It wasn't arbitrary. We actually had spoke to people, and they said that they weren't responsible, neither was it capricious. It wasn't just pulled out of thin air. There was a determination of that. So they do have the burden. I would submit to the hearing officer that they have not succeeded on that. They are not likely to succeed on the merits. Injunctive relief is an extraordinary remedy, and again, I've never seen this office issue that. You know, I might be wrong on that, but I don't recall any issuance of injunctive relief as to the stay. This office, as well as the Superior Court, have held time and time again that the language is clear when the stay applies, and in this case, it doesn't. The contract had been entered by the time we received the protest. Thank you.
Thompson, any comments on behalf of the interested party?
Yes, Mr. Hearing Officer. as we set out in our opposition to the appellant's motion, they are trying to establish an exception that would swallow the rule. The legislature set up a comprehensive scheme to govern the government procurement law, and they allowed a stay only in certain limited circumstances, and that is when the protest is timely and the protest is made before the award. And it's undisputed they did not comply with those two requirements here. Nonetheless, they say, well, even though we don't qualify for the statutory stay, the OPA should give us a stay anyway. And the problem with that argument is, as we set out in our memo, is that the legislature set forth the conditions under which a stay applies. They don't meet those conditions. They do not qualify for a stay. Now, even if we could ignore the legislature's requirements for issuing a stay in this type of situation, the problem with their argument is that they do not meet the standards under which, for example, federal courts review similar requests, as we set out in our memo, and I don't intend to repeat everything we put there.
You don't have to.
But I think that the problem, just right off the bat, the problem with their argument is they say, well, we're going to succeed on the merits. And as the counsel for the agency pointed out, they haven't talked about the merits at all. Their argument is a technicality. They say, well, we have not seen a log of communications. They haven't put forth any evidence that would support their claim that they were responsible or that the agency's determination was arbitrary or capricious. They are relying on a technicality, and I don't think that that satisfies the burden here, their burden of showing that the agency's determination of non-responsibility was arbitrary or capricious. More importantly, the contract is approximately 25-30% completed. What do they want the agency to do here? To let the trees go untrimmed, to let the grass go unmowed, to let the trash go unpicked up? There's a reason why the legislature allowed and authorized to stay under certain limited conditions. and they don't qualify for those conditions. They don't meet the conditions, and this hearing, the OPA should not allow them to create an exception that will swallow the rule. I'd be happy to answer any questions that the hearing officer might have.
Thank you. And Ms. Williams, any rebuttal?
Thank you. To address GVB's argument or point that they invited JJ Global to respond to their determination of non-responsibility and that the burden was on them, I want to look at the timing of this determination of non-responsibility, because not only is it supposed to be supported factually, but it's supposed to be promptly provided to JJ Global. Now, the bid was submitted August 20th. The bid analysis and administrative review was done on August 30th. And then on September 28th, 2018, GVB requested JJ Global clarify certain contacts on their project reference list. Now, that's almost a month after they've conducted the bid analysis and administrative review. Nothing in that letter, which is on page 214 of the procurement record, says anything about GVB receiving negative feedback or prior unsatisfactory project performance. They're only asking for contact information. So GVB can't rely on their December 18th or 19th response to the protest to say, well, we invited information. Why didn't they do it back in September 28th? Or why didn't they do it at any time in the month prior after they had done the bid analysis and administrative review? So JJ Global responded to that September 28th request, and it wasn't until October 31st, their dated notice of or determination of non-responsibility, a month later, that they say, well, we've determined that you're non-responsible. And it doesn't say, I mean, there was no time or moment in between where they said, okay, we've received information that you have unsatisfactory contract performance. They're saying they put JJ Global on notice and that they had an opportunity to respond. They didn't have a meaningful opportunity to respond. They didn't tell them until after they awarded the contract to LMS. So what would be the point of that? So here we are. That goes to the improper determination. I don't think that they can rest on saying, oh, well, you should have responded to the December 18th letter. They responded when they were asked. And now they awarded the contract to someone else, and here we are before the public auditor seeking relief. Now, on the authority of this office to issue a stay or injunctive relief, there's nothing in the statute of Guam procurement laws that limit the public auditor's authority in this regard. Now, there is the automatic stay, which was supposed to be a statutory protection to prevent from situations like this, so that the aggrieved bidder would have an opportunity to protest and trigger the automatic stay before an award, but that would have never happened here. Because at best, the determination of non-responsibility happened concurrently with the award to LMS. So that was never a potential remedy or protection to be invoked. Again, Mr. Fisher calls it an extraordinary remedy. It is an extraordinary remedy, but we're in extraordinary circumstances. We have an agency that's completely disregarded their obligations. They essentially shrugged their shoulders saying, well, we didn't keep a log. It's not optional. This is required by law, and it's a very important issue. And the courts have said an issue before the public auditor may be addressed, and the Office of Public Accountability has the authority to further the purposes and policies of Guam procurement law. And those purposes and policies are transparency, fairness, integrity, and having in the information in the procurement record to be able to determine things aren't arbitrary or capricious is critical to those purposes and policies. So I'd be happy to answer any questions.
Just a couple. So when did your client receive the notice of non-responsibility?
December 7th or 8th.
And then when was the award?
October 31st.
No, I think the date what?
No, you're not testifying here. We're not taking testimony. No. You're not sworn. This is just a motion hearing. Sorry, they're just keeping procedural. So unless Ms. Williams wants to put you on the stand, but then you'd also be subject to cross-examination by Mr. Fisher, likewise by Mr. Mitchell, or Mitch Thompson. So, but Ms. Williams, just off the top of your head, so the notice of non-responsibility was December the 7th or so?
It's dated October 31st, and it was received approximately a week after.
All right. So it's about December the 7th-ish. And then when was the award, though?
I believe that was October. The notice of award was October 31st, and the contract was signed November 1st.
And other than the notice of non-responsibility, there was no what other notices, if any, did your client receive, such as bid status, your bid's been rejected, or so on and so forth.
Actually, JJ Global contacted GBB on September 19th, about a month after the bid was opened, because they knew they were the lowest bidder, asking, what's the status of it?
I got that part of your argument, Ms. Williams. I'm just trying to ascertain, other than this notice of non-responsibility, which your client, which you state your client received around December the 7th, did they receive a notice of award?
I believe so.
Do you recall what date they received the notice of the award?
No, I don't.
Did you say the notice of award would have been on or about October the 31st?
October 31st or November 1st.
Thank you. Does either party have any other comments based on my questions?
We do, sir. Just for the hearing officer, the notice of award can be found at pages 137 to 138 of the agency procurement record. A letter written to Mr. Robert Salas on October 31st, 2018, and they acknowledged receipt of the notice of award on November 1st, 2018. It looks like a lady by the name of Annabelle, I can't quite make out the last name, received it at 3:37 p.m. on that date. You're familiar. You know that we.
I'm gonna take a look at the procurement record after this, but I just see it off the top of the head. But
so you'll find it at those two pages.
But what is clear is, or what I'm starting to see here is, they received the notice of non-responsibility around December the 7th or so. November the 7th.
Right, which we strongly dispute. We have evidence in the record supported by two affidavits that they actually received it on the 1st of November. But that's an issue that we're going to address later in the motions.
Okay, but I'll take a look at that. I'll take a closer look at the timeline based on what's in the record.
Okay.
All right. Mr. Thompson.
Nothing further at this time.
Ms. Williams, you have any further comments?
Nothing further on this motion.
Okay. All right, so the next motion is, I'm going to take this particular motion for injunctive relief and state of procurement under advisement. I hope to issue a response by the end of this week as we are going into the formal hearing by next week. Okay. So the next motion is the appellant's motion for order to supplement procurement record and motion for discovery. And, Ms. Williams, this is your motion. Once again, you have the floor.
Thank you. On the motion to supplement the procurement record, when JJ Global, when we received the procurement record and looking for it, well, actually, to step back, when they had communications with GBB, there was no communication that they had from GBB to JJ Global that they had received information about unsatisfactory contract performance. They only requested that they clarify their project reference list and update their contact information. Now, JJ Global did respond to this. They did that response on, I believe, September 28th to GBB. Now, then GVB comes back with this determination of non-responsibility a couple months later, or a couple months after the bid opening, and says, no, we've got, you know, reliable information that you are have unsatisfactory contract performance. So JJ Global submitted a Sunshine Act request, or FOIA request, to see what is this information, because they don't have it. They provided clarification in, with respect to their project performance. And when they look at the procurement record provided by GVB, there is no information in there. Then, now we're here in this appeal, and we've received the procurement record. It's certified that it's been complete. We still don't see the information on which GVB relied that would undermine any information that JJ Global has provided. In their response, the agency report, they say, we received reliable information repeatedly. GVB says, we received reliable information from XYZ. We've received reliable information from ABC. But nowhere in the response, the agency comments, or in the procurement record, does it say where this information comes from. Now, by law, GVB, if they receive reliable information regarding a potential bidder, that is a communication that's regarding a specific procurement that has to be logged. There has to be a log of that communication kept within the procurement record. That's not discretionary. That's by GCA 5249. It's not in there. That is what we're looking for. Now, when we filed this motion, GVB's response is, well, we don't have it, and we're not going to create one after the fact. So they've admitted that they don't have this. Now, that's not the end of the story, though, because this has to be addressed. So, okay, they don't have the log. They don't have the any evidence of these communications. They don't get to just shrug their shoulders and say, well, that's it. You know, trust us on this. The reason why they don't have to do that, that was addressed in the TLK, the GVB case that we cited in our briefs. Now, in that case, they were dealing with an RFP, but the procurement record was also incomplete. Same story. GVB says, well, we don't have copies of all those communities.
Well, let's talk about that for just a second. Okay. Now, was that case actually before the public auditor, or was there a decision at all, or are you just citing something that happened in some other case?
It was a decision before the public auditor. I think it was OPA 16003 and OPA 16005. I believe they were consolidated.
So you're saying you're citing a decision in an OPA case? And
there is a decision in the OPA case.
Okay.
And the
was that case reviewed by the Superior Court by any chance?
Yes.
Pardon me?
Superior Court. Okay. And so there's a Superior Court decision on that case as well?
Yeah. So the case was appealed to the Superior Court. That's civil case CV 91416. And there the court found that without this procurement record issue being addressed, so it didn't say how that this could be addressed, but without it being addressed, the public auditor's decision was arbitrary and capricious, and they remanded it back to the public auditor. Now, I looked up what happened in this case subsequently. I don't know how it's going to be addressed, because apparently it just came up for a status hearing on February 15th. But the court said, well, it's important, it has to be addressed, because a violation of certifying that the procurement record is complete and it's not complete and it's a violation of law could potentially void the whole procurement, and the public auditor had a duty to address this. So we have to address this somehow in this case. And that is what that Superior Court case said.
But the when you're talking about addressing it, your motion for discovery is for those materials you claim are missing. Is that right?
Right.
Okay.
We were going to request those documents be provided, but GVB's already said that they don't have it.
All right. Is there anything else in your motion? What exactly are you requesting from GVB?
If they don't have the communications, and they
all
don't
right.
have the
well, note. Is it the log of the communications or the actual communications? The log is just a summary of the communications the agency has received.
Well, we believe all should be provided in the procurement record, so we request all of them. If they don't have the log, then we want the actual communications. If they don't have the actual communications, we want to know exactly which people were communicating with who, so we can bring them before the public auditor.
Okay. Is there anything else you're requesting?
If they can't provide any of that, then they should certify that the procurement record is not complete. and admit that fact so we can address how to deal with that legally. The law provides remedies for that.
All right. Is there anything else?
Nothing further. Thank you.
Thank you. Mr. Fisher.
Yes, sir. I think the appellant is over-reading 5429, or I guess it's 5249. If the log exists, we have to turn it over. There's no question about that. It's explicit. If the log exists, we have to turn it over in the procurement record. But if the log doesn't exist, we're under no obligation to go out and create one. That's a different question. And then I reviewed the procurement record, and I have to add, so did appellant. They submitted a FOIA request, and I think we gave them the entire procurement record. So I don't know what their search and review of that may or may not have revealed to them. But let's assume that what she's saying is, I guess, correct. She also has to demonstrate that it's material, that the procurement would have changed if we had the log of communication. Which kind of, you know, it kind of brings us back around to the initial question that we went through about the injunctive relief, I suppose. But, really, that's a response. And as we told her, as we told appellant, you know, in our response, we said, you're welcome to come and review it again. You're welcome to come over today and review it again. So it's kind of like we filed an objection to this motion to supplement the record, but I guess we don't really object to that because everything that the law requires us to turn over, of course they can have it. We've got no interest in withholding, information, material or not. We're just, you know, frankly interested in getting the work done, but I guess that's our response, sir.
So it's your position that everything in GBB's possession in terms of the procurement record, you've handed over to the OPA and to the appellant?
Yes, that's my position, but I have to be frank with you. There's a witness here, Ms. Chris Lozama from the Guam Visitors Bureau, and prior to the hearing beginning, I spoke to her, and I asked her whether or not we had, some sort of a communications and so forth, and she confirmed that we did, and then I was a little concerned about that, but I noticed that Ms. Williams included those emails, those outgoing emails in her exhibits, but again, it's an open book.
And you're saying that you have no duty to create a log of communications received by the agency that relates to this procurement?
Yeah, yes, sir, because 5429 is, as I recall, is kind of a laundry list of what must be included in the procurement record. That's my recollection, and there's a host of things that have to be included in the procurement record. But as in procurement to procurement, agencies sometimes don't create those things. So there's nothing to put into the record. But if they have created it, they must turn it over.
So you're saying that if the agency doesn't create the documents required for the procurement record, mm-hmm. it never does have to create them if it's required?
You mean like a kind of a post hoc creation of these things?
That's correct.
I look at it the same way that we look at like FOIA or Sunshine Act requests. You know, frequently a requestor will say, give us this information. But the information has never been collated or collected and onto a particular document. So that request is not subject to FOIA, obviously, because it doesn't exist. And our reading of this particular statute is if you created it, turn it over.
Well, let's talk about that log of communication. So let's say I am bitter. A, for example, and I call up the head of GVB and I say, when are you going to, or would you be willing to extend the deadline for the submission of the bids? Regardless of what her answer is, do you think that kind of communication should at least be entered into a log?
It may be.
No. Do you think it should be?
Yes, and I'm saying it may be necessary to do it.
Likewise, let's say I'm bidder A, I call again. But this time I'm saying, I submitted my bid, but I will give you personally $10,000 in whatever offshore bank account you designate
right.
if you ensure that my bid prevails against everyone else's. Under your premise, if we don't create it, we never have to provide it. Mm-hmm. Neither of those communications would be entered into a log if there's, you know, it's not through an email or if it's not through a some kind of record that indicates who's calling, what day they're calling, and why they're calling. Do you think that's what you're proposing? Or?
Oh, absolutely not. I can't imagine. I mean, the facts as you've given them to us, I can't imagine a procurement officer not recording that. I think if they didn't record it and somehow tried to hide the fact of that offer, they would be essentially be joining a conspiracy. I don't know if you can conspire to attempt.
But those are examples where...
yeah, they should.
One legitimate, one not, where... because there's no email, there's no letter, there's no hard document, if you will. Mm-hmm. Without a log, there's no evidence that that communication or that effort of communication took place. Likewise, if I showed up at the office and I simply said, let's say I'm not calling up, I'm actually personally going for both of those purposes.
Mm-hmm.
Under your analysis or your interpretation of the law, without creating such a log, those visits would otherwise be undocumented because, once again, there's no log stating on this day this person came concerning the procurement for this reason.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm not going to assume criminality on the.
Oh no! That was just an example. That was an extreme example, but I was trying to show how the log could then be used to go back and. Hey, this person saw you twice. Well, why do you see you the third? Well, he saw me for this reason. What about the second time? Well, I don't recall.
Okay. Great. Well, so, I understand your point, and it's well taken. So, I can't push back against what you said. Ideally, it would be wonderful to have that log and a complete transcript, I suppose, of every discussion having to do with procurement.
Well, it doesn't require a complete transcript. It does require, though, notes of meetings, for example. And it does require, I believe... a log of the communications.
Well, I guess it's a difference in interpretation. Our interpretation is if you've done it, turn it over. But it's not a...
but if you're not, you're excused from making it in the first place. Is that...
I'm sorry?
Yeah, but if you don't do it at all, you're excused from the duty to, or the obligation to create a log.
Well, I guess it's a statutory interpretation.
Uh-huh.
But... I mean, the larger point is, do they want us to create from memory this log? Would that satisfy them? I don't think it would. If we took a recess for an hour and a half, we went back and we knocked out some sort of a memo of what we think was said, I don't think that that's what would satisfy them. They're looking for, I don't know, some evidence of, I don't know, some conspiracy, I don't know what it is, that GBB engaged in. If we had that log, we'd turn it over. There's no reason for us to hold on to it.
Okay, but you're saying that there is no such log because no such log was made. Would that be a fair assessment of your argument?
That would be a fair assessment of my statement. I don't recall seeing one.
I should say there's no log to hand over because no log was made.
Right. I've got the entire procurement record. In a banker's box in my office, and I would invite the appellant to come look through it again.
Thank you. Mr. Thompson? Mr. Fisher, are you done?
I'm sorry, I'm getting a note passed to me from a client.
Okay, go ahead.
Kind of just a second to look in the agency report. Oh, I thank you very much. There is I don't suppose it's exactly what Ms. Williams is looking for, and thank you. But pages, I'd invite the hearing officer to look at the pages in the agency report, beginning at page 132. It's a memorandum of bid analysis, which contains a conversation about I guess, contact with the various bidders.
Page 82, you say?
I'm sorry.
Page 82?
132.
Oh, excuse me.
132 through, what's the bid analysis? Looks like 132 through 136. I don't know if this satisfies what Ms. Williams believes the log should be, but it is a discussion of the analysis and, I guess, some contact with the bidders, disappointed in other words.
So it describes various contacts with various parties related to the procurement?
Well, it's entitled Bid Analysis and Administrative Review. I don't believe this is actually a log, but it's evidence of what was going on. And so I would ask that Ms. Williams, that might satisfy her or not. And sir, that would be in the, actually that's the agency procurement record. That's
all right. So the bigger file.
The bigger one. That's all I have on that issue.
All right. I'll certainly review that in detail. Mr. Thompson.
LMS took no position on that motion.
Thank you. And Ms. Williams, any rebuttal?
JJ Global, we definitely have a disagreement on the requirement of the log. We don't think that the standard is if it exists, then we will provide one. The requirement is that you have to have one. If you look at the statute 5 GCA 5249, it says each procurement officer shall maintain a complete record of the procurement, and the record shall include the following. Then it enumerates what needs to be included. And subsection B is the part that includes a log of all communications between government employees and any member of the public, potential bidder, vendor, or manufacturer, which is in any way related to the procurement. I mean, the language of that language of the statute is mandatory. It's got this, it's really broad, over-encompassing language. Like, we don't want to leave any doubt. Anything related to this procurement in any way, it shall be included in the procurement record, and there has to be a log of it. Now they say, well, if it doesn't exist, then we don't have to provide it, but it should exist, because there was undoubtedly communications. I believe what GVB is referencing right now is in the procurement record is some communications outgoing from GVB to these agencies that purportedly provided information on JJ Global's unsatisfactory performance. But the procurement record doesn't include a log or any, it doesn't include the underlining communications in response to GVB's inquiry. There's no record, or there's nothing in the record that shows that they actually received a response, and a response that is consistent with the position that they're taking now. And the statute doesn't say that just include communications, it says a log. I also want to point out, if we can refer back to the procurement record 132 to 136, and they're citing this as support of evidence of the type of communications that were going on or what was going on. Now, 132 to 136 is the bid analysis and administrative review. And if you turn to the last page on 136, the furthest right column, they're going down the list, the IFB checklist, checking if things are signed, if all the proper affidavits and declarations were included, and then the project reference list. So it's about five rows from the bottom, project reference list. And you go all the way to the right on page 136, and it says, see attached notes from reference background check. You turn the page, there's no notes attached. There's nowhere in this procurement record attached to the bid analysis and administrative review that shows these notes, references, notes from reference or background check that they're referring. Now, there's copies of facsimile transmissions and emails that GVB sent to some of the project, some agencies and companies who are on the project reference list. But again, there's no communication in response, and there's definitely no log of that. Now, under the statute, that's required. So not only do we have, you know, something that they've admitted they don't have, but we have their bid analysis and administrative review referencing something that is not in this record. So it's not complete on its face. So we have the evidence showing that it's not there. That's not the end of the story. Just to go back briefly to the appeal, the TLK GVB appeal that went to the Superior Court. In that case, the court said the OPA was supplied with evidence that GVB's procurement record was grossly incomplete, missing logs of communications required by statute, and that the absence of these documents could have potentially resulted in the cancellation of the RFP, and the issue was clearly before the OPA. Therefore, the OPA's failure to address this important issue renders its decision arbitrary, capricious, and contrary to law. So that's where we get back to this procurement record, this incomplete procurement record has to be addressed in some manner. I'm not saying that I know exactly what they're talking about, you know, when it's been remanded back to the OPA, this office has still not addressed how to address this procurement record. But a good start would be the procurement officer certifying that it's not complete, either providing the documents that they reference on page 136 that say they're attached. We've never seen these documents, provide those, and certifying that they've never completed a log. Now, then we can go from there. Because and it'll be a matter of law and a legal interpretation on whether this is required by law and whether that would void the whole procurement.
All right, do you have anything else, Ms. Williams?
Nothing further, thank you.
All right, so I'm going to take the appellant's motion for order to supplement procurement and motion for discovery under advisement as well. On an off note, Mr. Fisher, if the OPA decides that the log is actually a required part of the procurement record, do you believe your client could produce one? And if so, how long do you think that would take?
As to the last part of the question, I'm not sure, but as to the first part, I suppose we could write notes up to the best of our recollection of what happened.
Well, there would be evidence. There would be the emails, there would be letters, there would be
memory.
Memory.
Yeah.
Okay. So those are, but you don't, would a week be sufficient?
Yes. Yeah.
So at least a week?
By the agency, a week would be sufficient.
How about 2 days?
They indicate yes, they could.
Okay. If you are, that's something that actually occurs. You would be the very first GovGuam agency to achieve that feat in such a short period of time.
Then we'll say, no, we can't.
Well, I'm just saying that's a representation. So. All right. That was just an aside question. Like I said, I haven't decided one way or the other, and this matter is under advisement, but certainly I don't want to make a decision that results in 3 or 4 emergency motions. So that is it for...
Just begin work on that, just in case.
All right. So that is it for your motions, Ms. Williams. Mr. Fisher, the remaining motion is yours. That is your motion to dismiss an appeal, and you have the floor for that motion.
Thank you very much, sir. This motion is both straightforward and unpleasant. I used to be a prosecutor, and I've been defense counsel, so I know what it means to accuse somebody of committing a crime. We submitted the notice of non-responsibility to JJ Global on the 1st of November. The evidence of that is in the record, and we have 2 affidavits in support of that. Ms. Lisa Linick, who is present here today, and a gentleman by the name of Garrett Uggen, who is, I guess, down in Pneumatic cleaning up after the festivities yesterday. But their affidavits are in the file. It was, in fact, delivered to them on the 1st. The significance of that is you got 14 days under the law to file a protest from the time you knew or should have known, you know, the offending act. They actually came in, I think, on the 17th day. So the protest was too late. It's untimely. And that being the case, that the OPA no longer has, or never had, and does not have jurisdiction over the issue because it was untimely. Why did JJ Global do that? Because they were aware of the that they were out of time, and it was easy to alter the document, change a 1 to a 7. And then they submitted it as part of the record. I've never seen anything like it. The problem, the biggest problem with that is it's a criminal act, and it was an attempt to deceive. And, you know, even though in that letter of non-responsibility on the first, of course we didn't include that because we were unaware of it, but I just can't conceive, I'll be frank, I just can't conceive of a situation under which Guam Visitors Bureau, knowing that they had been defrauded by a potential vendor criminally, would ever do business with them. I mean, if that is not a hallmark of non-responsibility, I don't know what is. We came forward with that alteration and supported it with evidence. JJ Global hasn't pushed back on that. I don't know that they have a response to it. You know, they're saying, no, we didn't. And somehow they seem to suggest, I guess, or actually say that it was actually the Visitors Bureau who committed the fraud by altering the document to go from the 7th to the 1st. Which is absurd. That would have entailed a conspiracy of I don't know how many people in the Guam Visitors Bureau to do that, just because you don't like JJ Global. That's crazy. That's why I say it's so unpleasant, because it's never fun to accuse some, and let's just call it an entity. It's never fun to accuse an entity of criminal actions, but they're subject to debarment as well. And you know, once this gets to the AG's office, I don't know what they'll do.
Well, this isn't a debarment proceeding. This is not a debarment proceeding.
No, it's not at all. It's not.
To my knowledge, no debarment proceeding has begun.
No, and that's correct. But it could, and it would lead to a debarment of, I think, a cap of 2 years. But you're right, this is not a debarment proceeding. But I think that, I just offer that so the hearing officer knows the seriousness. To me, this is the hallmark of the entire case. It's just breathtaking that an agency would do that, especially when they have to know they're going to get caught. Not an agency, but a business would do that. I mean, they have to know they're going to get caught. We've got the originals. So because of the fact that their protest to the agency was untimely, there is no jurisdiction in this agency.
Okay, so it's more that the OPA has no jurisdiction over this appeal. Would that be correct?
Yes, because of the fact that the protest
because was... Because of the untimely filing of the appeal. Okay.
Of the protest.
What? The
protest then appeal.
Protest and appeal. And so, your decision, did your... the GVB's decision denying the protest, did GVB raise that issue?
I think we did.
Okay.
I'd have to look at it. I'd hate to... Of course, that's going to be in the that'll be in the agency report.
It would be in the original agency before it ever made the OPA, because the OPA only reviews agency decisions.
Right.
Whatever the decision denying their protest action, this would have to be raised in it. Otherwise, jurisdiction could be raised at any time, generally speaking.
Right.
But,
and we can't confer jurisdiction on you.
That is correct. Okay. So the GPS originals.
But, I believe that our response was in the...
So you're saying the protest is untimely.
Right.
Anything else, Mr. Fisher?
No, sir.
Thank you.
The denial. I'm just looking for the denial of the protest, but no further argument.
All right, Ms. Williams. Oh, hang on. This was joined by the interested party, Mr. Thompson, on behalf of your client.
yes, Mr. Hearing Officer. what's striking is that in the opposition to the motion submitted by the appellant, there was no affidavit contradicting the affidavits submitted by the agency in support of its motion. I think that kind of ends the question.
So you're approaching this from kind of an evidentiary direction. So no contradictory affidavits. Okay, anything else, Mr. Thompson?
Nothing further.
All right, Ms. Williams.
Thank you.
Well, right. This isn't a debarment proceeding. This isn't a criminal proceeding. This is an appeal, JJ Global's appeal on GVB's decision on their protest. If I could ask the hearing officer to turn to page 325 of the agency procurement record. That's their December 18, 2018 decision. I'm not going to read the entire decision on the record, but I will submit that there is nothing there in that decision that says anything about JJ Global's protest being untimely. Now, that's something that they would have said then if they believed it untimely, and they wouldn't have to go into the merits of their decision. Not only do they not deny it for untimeliness, so they've essentially waived this timely issue if there is a timeliness issue.
Okay, but jurisdiction can be raised at any time, even if it's raised for the first time on appeal.
That's correct.
Okay.
So even if we're going to the timeliness issue now, if you look at the second to last paragraph in the decision on the protest, it says the Guam Visitors Bureau will reconsider its determination should JJ Global elect to provide evidence of satisfactory performance. In the event, further down, in the event JJ Global decides to submit such additional evidence, please do so no later than 14 days after the date of this letter. So not only have they said raise the issue of timeliness here, which goes against, kind of undermines the credibility of their allegations now, but they're saying, we're going to give you more time to respond to our determination of non-responsibility. So by saying that, even if JJ Global received it more than 14 days prior, by allowing them more time, they've waived the timeliness issue. They've invited further information. So we obviously have a dispute. They say JJ Global hasn't pushed back on this issue, or we didn't provide an affidavit. Well, we submitted the acknowledgement receipt of the decision that we're protesting. It's signed by Ms. Rosemena. We've identified her as a potential witness. We have the receipt date on that acknowledgement receipt on two documents, November 7th, 2018, not November 1st. So this is an evidentiary issue that is very much in dispute. Now, to the extent that it can't be decided now, we are going to have the witnesses at the formal hearing, and that would be the proper time and place to adjudicate that if the hearing officer doesn't find that they waived the timeliness issue by virtue of the language of their December 18th decision.
So what is the, what's the name of the witness you say?
Rosemena.
Rosemena. But you kind of put her as a witness on your behalf for the formal hearing, is that correct?
Correct.
Thanks. Is there anything else?
Nothing further.
Okay. Mr. Fisher?
The time to push back on this issue is today, because this is a motion to dismiss the appeal based on jurisdiction. As to the timeliness issue, I'll just cite, black-letter law, we cannot confer jurisdiction on this body. So whether we raised it or didn't raise it is immaterial. If no jurisdiction exists, we can't pull it out of thin air. This idea of giving, we would have waived it and given them an extension. We don't have the authority to give them an extension. The statute says 14 days. That was up to the legislature. And I guess, what's that saying, no good deed goes unpunished? We told them, hey, we found you to be non-responsible. If you guys have information that we overlooked or didn't look deep enough into or whatever, give it to us and we will reconsider. They didn't do that. It was not a waiver. There's a lot of reasons that litigants do and do not do things. So I'm not going to delve into that, but they certainly had the opportunity. We have no ability to change the 14-day window for a timely protest.
But to get there, we'd have to find that the documents were altered.
That's true. And we've got Ms. Linick here. I don't know if you want to take testimony from her, but she's one of the people who submitted an affidavit, and she'd be happy to speak to you. And Ms. Williams as well, of course.
Would her statements on the stand be any different than her statements in the affidavit?
No, I don't think so. Neither would Mr. Uggins. And, the affidavits were submitted. And of course, JJ Global could have submitted an affidavit in response. But again, I'm not going to delve into it. For various reasons, they didn't. Thank you.
Mr. Thompson?
In response to the argument as far as the December 18th ruling on the protest, JJ says, well, they left the door open, and they gave us an additional 14 days to respond. But the problem with that argument is JJ Global did not respond. It might be different if they had submitted some documents in response to that request. They did not. And so really, it's hard to understand their argument, given the agency gave them an opportunity to respond, and they didn't take advantage of that opportunity. LMS believes that it is significant that there is no testimony under penalty of perjury that contradicts the testimony of the affidavit submitted by the agency. Thank you.
Okay, I'm going to take this issue up under advisement. I'm going to try very, very, very hard to render a written decision on all these motions by Friday. Kind of tough because, you know, I have Supreme Court briefs due tomorrow. But that still leaves me time. I'm hoping to get that done, like I said, by Friday. Monday by the latest, okay. Are there any other issues that we need to address at this time? Mr. Fisher.
Yes, thank you. I didn't realize it. For some reason, I didn't realize this was scheduled for the 13th. I've got the trial with the Lieutenant Governor starting on the 13th for the Superior Court.
What time?
I think 10.
This starts at 9.
That trial should be, that's about as straightforward as a trial gets, having said that. Jury selection is going to be the biggest hurdle. But once that's done, I can't imagine the trial lasting more than 2 days. There's basically only 3 witnesses.
So this is kind of a fourth motion to continue?
Would it be our first?
Pardon? No. There's 3 motions we've discussed today.
Oh, the fourth motion? I would ask for a 2-week continuance.
What would 2 weeks put us into?
The
27th of March.
Did he say 27?
If we go 2 weeks from the 13th.
Mm-hmm. Oh, okay.
What would 1 week be?
The 20th.
How about March the 20th?
I'm off island in the PI for medical.
From when to when?
The procedure scheduled for the 20th.
When are you returning?
I'm not real sure. Maybe the 23rd?
So what's wrong with the 27th?
That would be fine, yeah.
Okay. Ms. Williams?
Finally starting on the 27th.
Okay. And you still haven't submitted your... none of the parties submitted subpoenas, did they?
No.
Okay, good. So there are no subpoenas. Nobody's been subpoenaed. So you're fine with the 27th, Ms. Williams. Mr. Thompson?
That's fine, Your Honor.
Okay. So Mr. Camacho, we're hearing all this responding. All right. So for good cause shown, we're going to continue formal hearing from the 13th of March to the 27th of March, same time, 9 a.m. What day is that?
Wednesday.
Yeah, it'll be a Wednesday as well. Okay.
Thank you very much.
Are there any other issues?
No, but I thank co-counsel, too, for the courtesy.
All right. So this hearing is adjourned. It is 10:34. Thank you.
Thank you.